Here made audiobook in MP3 of The Last Crossing by Gladys Osborne Leonard, author of My Life in Two Worlds. Intro. Gladys Osborne Leonard was born in Lytham in May 1882. She claimed to have experienced her first visitation by spirits when she was a child. She claimed that the spirits would show her landscapes which she would refer to as the Happy Valley. She was trained as a singer, but childhood illness in 1906 prevented her from continuing. Her interest in spiritualism developed whilst she was ill when a spiritualist nurse in the hospital invited her to take part in her first table séance. Work by 1915, Leonard was giving professional readings. She claimed to channel the spirit of an Indian woman named Feda who had been married to her great-great-grandfather, and readings were given through her. Patrons of Leonard attested that when Feda was being channeled, Leonard spoke in broken English with little understanding of the language. Leonard gained fame as a medium after conducting seances with the family of Oliver Lodge, which were described in his book Raymond or Life and Death, 1916. The book documented the seances that he and his wife had attended with Leonard. Lodge was convinced that his son Raymond had communicated with him, and the book is a description of his son's experiences in the spirit world. According to the book, Raymond had reported that people who had died were still the same people when they passed over. There were houses, trees and flowers, and the spirit world looked similar to Earth, but there is no disease. The book also claimed that when soldiers died in World War I, they had smoked cigars and received whiskey in the spirit world, and because of such statements the book was criticized. Walter Cook wrote a rebuttal to Lodge's reflections on Raymond, 1917, that directly challenged Lodge's beliefs in spiritualism. In 1918, Leonard began working with the Society for Psychical Research. 7. The Society would often use proxies in place of grieving relatives in an attempt to minimize fraud. Their publication detailing the results of these sittings was praised by psychical researchers and resulted in even more publicity for Leonard. Leonard later worked with Radcliffe Hall, and the results of those sessions were published in the Proceedings for the Society for Psychical Research in 1919. Contents. Chapters. The One Thing We Fear, Our Two Bodies, A Way of Escape from the Web of Life, Decay and Wholeness, When Death Approaches, Rolling the Stone from the Grave Away, Every Galvary Has an Olivet, Practical Methods of Helping the Dying, The Last Hours, Fear of Being Buried Alive, Sorrow as an Avenue to Joy, A Terrible Experience when the Melancholy Fit Shall Fall, Nothing Venture Nothing Win, The Halfway World, A Strange Experiment, Mind ACTS on Matter, Dangers and Complications, A Dissertation on Prayer, Can a Spirit Commit Suicide? The Dream State, Animals and Their Etheric Bodies, Important Scientific Corroboration, The Light That Never Fails, More About Light, A Wonderful Experience, The Outward and Inward Man. Chapter 1. The One Thing We Fear. There is one thing in life that the majority of men and women fear. One inescapable, inevitable event that each one must face. We cannot guard against it. We may perhaps delay its coming and gain a brief respite, but eventually we have to face it. Indeed, it is probably its inevitability that appalls us, because man instinctively desires to put off the unpleasant or fearful thing as long as possible. There are some people who regard, as Blake did, our human lives as only a mortal stage of which death happens to be a part. Yet even these more fortunate ones may feel some qualms about that last journey into the unknown, either for themselves or for someone whom they dearly love. Who can blame them? Death, as we have known it, is shrouded in mystery, which man instinctively hates and fears. His whole life, from childhood through maturity, is spent in endeavoring to simplify and clarify whatever problems daily existence may bring. Consciously and subconsciously he resents mystery, and as far as possible he only comes to grips with what appear to him to be normal events, such as a career, marriage, the coming of children, holidays, etc. Even illness is looked upon as an ordinary happening in most people's lives, because there is usually present the belief in recovery, and resumption of everyday life again in a comparatively short time. Holidays are prepared for joyfully, even great changes, such as setting out on a long journey to some far-off country where we will begin a new career under entirely new conditions, are viewed with equanimity, because, as in sickness, there is always the probability of a return to old friends and circumstances. But death, that dread word, seems to be an ending to all the known and accustomed things, to work, to love, and interests. So, many of us avoid all reference to it, all contemplation of this strange and terrifying phenomenon. Even to those who believe that death is a door with two sides and the other side of it belongs to immortality, shrink from certain aspects of death, for themselves, the fear of long drawn out suffering which may cause them to be a burden and trouble to those whose task it is to care for them, or in the case of someone who is near to them, a husband or wife, a dearly loved relative or friend, there is the terrible heartache occasioned by watching the suffering, and perhaps the struggles, that precede the actual transition, combined with the feeling of helplessness to relieve their distress. As R.C. Trench says, "When we are doomed to stand inactive by, watching the soul's or body's agony, which human effort helps not to make less, well, we feel then we would give anything in the world to be able to do something that might help that dear sufferer to relinquish his hold on the tired out physical body, quietly, normally, and peacefully. Medical science provides us with merciful physical aids for intense pain, but there are many who shrink from the use of morphine and similar drugs, either from moral scruples, or because they have found by personal experience that these drugs, far from acting as a sedative or pacifying agent in their particular case, are worse than useless, because they excite and irritate. These unfortunate cases may be comparatively few and far between, but personally I have known several such, and it is in the endeavor to make the act of dying easier that I am going to give some information regarding very simple methods that I found helpful in cases where drugs and medicines failed entirely. Indeed, so simple is one important treatment that some people may doubt its efficacy. There is an underlying, but as yet little understood scientific reason for its use, as I shall endeavor to show later. In addition to the purely physical side of death, there is the spiritual and mental aspect, and we can give help to the one who is preparing to face this great change, so that he can meet it with peace, and even joyful interest. We can enable ourselves to rejoice that our dear one is being released from the limitations of the physical life. We can be glad that he is doing so, providing we know or understand something of that new condition of existence which he is about to enter. In order to provide such information as I can give on these two important aspects of the case, I am drawing principally on my personal experience, and also from some first-hand experiences related to me by other people which support and substantiate my own conclusions. Chapter 2. Our Two Bodies. 2,000 years ago Saint Paul said there is a physical and there is a spiritual body. Today many eminent scientists are beginning to accept the existence of this second body as a proven fact, and some among them have demonstrated its existence beyond all shadow of doubt. Witness the Kilner screens, invented by the late Drive Kilner, which enabled many ordinary persons to perceive the existence of the ethereal or astral body more or less clearly. In the past many names have been given to this second body, such as the soul body, etheric body, astral body, mental body, even fluidic body, but for the purpose of this book I may refer to it by any one of the first three, because these seem to be the names that are most commonly used and understood at present. Whatever name one may call it by, it is the body which the soul, and under this heading I am including the mind and individuality, will inhabit when it is separated by death from the physical body. What exactly are the constituents of which this finer body is composed, it is difficult to say. Some authorities say it is fluidic, being composed mainly of water or moisture of some kind, just as our physical body is made up of 70% of water. Others say it consists of a system of magnetic stresses. Probably both are right, and the actual material elements of the etheric body are watery substances animated or energized by the electromagnetic stresses, and controlled by thought, which is simply mind in action, whether it is operating in the etheric or physical brain. There is no doubt about its existence. The trouble is, We know so little about it and its functions and possibilities. Through personal experience, I am convinced that the study of this second body opens out a new and wonderful field of research, and that in a few years' time we shall understand much more about it, and stand appalled by our previous ignorance on the subject. It is imperative that we realize, firstly, that we possess an etheric body, secondly, that it is possible to use it here and now under the right conditions, and it will be well for us seriously to study this point, so as to ascertain as far as possible what are the right ones, and thirdly, that we can and should develop our conscious minds on the purest and finest lines, because by doing so we are forming character and personality, which persist after physical death, and undoubtedly determine our place and position in the hereafter. Even in these present days of rush and strain, a surprisingly large number of quite normal and ordinary type of people are aware of the existence of this etheric body. During sleep they consciously leave the physical body and travel in the etheric, sometimes to faraway places on earth, when they may visit some friend who is in need of help, sometimes to other planes of existence where they see and commune with those who are dead, and have left their physical bodies permanently. For evidence in support of this statement, one of the books I advise you to read, if you have not already done so, is The Projection of the Astral Body, by Mr. Head Carrington, where many instances are given of the conscious use of man's ability to leave his physical body, and function in the etheric. It is not a power given to the chosen few and denied to others. It is common to all, but many have not contemplated the possibility, because to them it seems such a new and staggering idea that their minds reject it as impossible. I am convinced that it is mostly a matter of practice. Undoubtedly, it would take some people longer to accomplish than others, just as it takes them longer to demonstrate many other quite normal faculties in the course of everyday life. On the earth plane we are held back from much we should like to do through lack of necessary material means, money, physical strength, time, and opportunity, etc., but in the etheric world there are no such obstacles. It is a field of adventure open to all who have the will and sufficient desire and enthusiasm to penetrate beyond the limitations of the physical. Here a vital question arises: is it safe to venture into this unknown territory? Personally, I am sure it is safe if we undertake the investigation in a sincere desire to know more about our real selves, our infinite possibilities, so making ourselves of more service to others in our own daily existence on earth, then I am sure we are protected by the very purity of our motives. An unselfish desire for knowledge as a step to true progress cannot lead to anything but good. Are we not struggling to know God, to realize Him and His wondrous works? And is it not feasible that we shall learn more about Him, and draw nearer to Him by learning more about ourselves, our two bodies, the physical, which often baffles us in the daily struggle for self-expression in the earth life, and that lesser-known vehicle, the etheric body, in which the soul dwells, and through which we can make a more conscious and definite link with that infinite source of supply, which is always available, could we but reach out to it? It is a fact that the nearer we draw to the final dissolution of the physical, the more likely we are to become spontaneously and naturally conscious of the etheric counterpart. This happens in many cases when the individual has never heard of such a possibility, never read about it, or been in the slightest degree interested in the subject. As the physical body loses strength, the etheric body gains it. This action is automatic, but the process can be, and often is, greatly assisted if those around the dying person realize this fact. There is no doubt that the whole process of death can be made considerably easier in every sense by a recognition of the existence of the etheric body and its needs, during the difficult period of transition and separation from the physical, with which it has been associated for so many years. Death can be made a peaceful and even beautiful transition from one phase of existence to another by a right understanding of a few simple laws. It should be a natural discarding of, and complete withdrawal from, a no longer needed outer garment, and not the distressing and disturbing spectacle it sometimes is. In saying this, one must eliminate certain cases of violent death. It is almost impossible for the onlooker to say what occurs and what does not occur in the minds of those who pass to the other side in such a manner, but from certain information received supernormally, as we call it, from such cases after the transition, we gather that they know very little about it at the time. In any case, nothing could have been done for them because of the suddenness of such a death, so we must confine ourselves to understanding what can be done to make conditions easier in the cases of death from ordinary illness or old age. Chapter 3. A way of escape from the web of life. The etheric body can and does manifest independently from the physical body during the lifetime of the latter. Many students of the occult have attained the power of projecting the etheric body consciously and voluntarily. They can visit distant places, and bring back a more or less perfect memory of whatever they have seen or heard. In some cases there is corroboration of this, because they have been seen or heard themselves by someone in the place they have visited. It is claimed that with practice anybody can travel in this manner. Again referring to Mr. Head Carrington's book, The Projection of the Astral Body, Mr. Sylvan Muldoon gives numerous instances of his ability to project his soul and body at will, and asserts that after finding out that it was possible to do it, he determined to experiment with a view to doing it voluntarily. This he did, with great success. Whether such constant practice of exteriorizing the astral body would be beneficial or otherwise, I cannot say, because I must admit that I have never been able to produce such a phenomenon at will. Such experiences have usually come to me spontaneously and unexpectedly. Until comparatively recently I had not tried for any length of time, as my life was too full and busy, and such attempts as I had made have been spasmodic and at long intervals, probably because I had read some thrilling and convincing description of such feats, but I always met with complete failure, and returned to my usual work and pastimes with the feeling that these were my jobs, and that the conscious projection of the astral or etheric body is best left to those who have circumstances, time, and inclination to carry out a really persistent study of it. Since my husband's passing, which took place 2 years ago, I have had more personal incentive to investigation of the etheric world, and I feel that I have had sufficient personal evidence of the existence and powers of the etheric body to justify me in setting forth my experiences in this book. The incentive that spurs me on to do this is the feeling that once we accept the evidence of the existence of this second body, we are well on the way to an understanding that we possess a vehicle through which our minds can function after death. The materialistic man of science and the atheist maintain that when the death of the physical body takes place, the brain dies with it, and so the mind must die also, as it no longer has a vehicle to work through. Now, the etheric body is similar in all respects to the physical body during the earth life, and for some time after death, it possesses a brain, just as it has arms and legs, ears, eyes, and lips. When I state for some time after death, I do not mean that I think this second body ever dies, or ceases to exist, but I think it may undergo certain changes in the course of time. As the soul progresses and attains to higher planes of existence, I think the etheric body may become finer, ever tending toward a more perfect state of development. This etheric brain makes a far better and easier instrument for the mind than did the physical brain, because it has not the disadvantages of the grosser physical conditions to weigh and harass it. Bodily fatigue, frustration, ills and woes of many kinds, combined with the continual struggle for material existence, in themselves adversely affect the brain, and have a tendency to prevent the mind from turning upwards to more spiritual and uplifting subjects, because of the necessity of focusing on the troubles of daily life. As Whittier said, through every web of life the dark threads run, but as we grow more conscious of this second body, and of the possibility of occasionally escaping from the clogging conditions of the physical, we shall endeavor to spread the knowledge that will enable anybody who desires to do so, to spend a certain time in consciousness of higher and happier planes through actual astral experience. A definite knowledge of this other body, which we possess here and now, and of the other life awaiting us, would help us through many a dark patch in our earthly lives, during which we feel inclined to say, "Is this the way, my father?" Tis, my child, thou must pass through this tangled, dreary wild if thou wouldst reach the city undefiled, thy peaceful home above. Is it a peaceful home above? I hear someone ask. Yes, it will be for those who have passed through the tangled, dreary wild with patience and a good heart, recognizing the truth that the ills we see, the mysteries of sorrow, deep and long, the dark enigmas of permitted wrong, have all one key. This strange sad world is but our Father's school. All chance and change His love shall grandly overrule. The italics are mine, but alas, I do not know who wrote these words, so cannot acknowledge their authorship. Just as schooldays are not all dark or dreary, but are enlivened by holidays, happy visits to relatives and friends, which are in themselves a glimpse into, and a promise of, the greater freedom that will be ours when schooldays are over, so will our daily lives be illuminated by the thought that the real world is around us now. As E.S. Hooper said, I slept, and dreamed that life was beauty. I woke, and found that life was duty. Was thy dream, then, a shadowy lie? Toil on, sad heart, courageously, and thou shalt find thy dream to be a noonday light and truth to thee. My own personal experiences of that other world and the reality of the other body have been so real and definite that I feel impelled to pass them on to my readers, and if retailing them is a noonday light to even one struggling or sorrowful soul, I shall feel it was well worthwhile recording them. Chapter 4. Decay and Wholeness. So many of us have watched the slow, insidious oncoming of incurable disease, its relentless attack on the defenseless mortal body of someone who is dear to us. Now, according to eminent medical authorities, there is a curious similarity between the processes through which the body passes in youth and in old age, especially with regard to certain diseases and symptoms, such as senile convulsions and infantile convulsions, senile eczema and infantile eczema, to mention only two illustrations of the many disorders that beset an individual at both ends of his physical life. In babyhood, his constitution has not yet attained its full vigor, in old age it is losing it. The processes of decay are gradual, and do not affect all the structures of the body in the same way at the same time. In some people, and I feel sure that temperament plays an important part here, they begin much earlier than in others. Changes take place in the bones, the muscles, the heart, the blood vessels, and the vertebrae. All these various forms of decay are gradual and progressive. Death may appear to take place suddenly from apoplexy, heart disease, etc., but it is the termination, not the disease itself, that is sudden. The encroachment of disease may have been going on for years without the patient or his friends being aware of its existence. But in addition to many of these physical changes, we find that the mental faculties to some extent share in the general deterioration. Irritability, loss of memory, and its accompanying tendency to reiteration, suspicion, and a bad-tempered attitude toward those who are in their immediate vicinity, are among the many distressing symptoms that one may see in an individual whose nature in earlier life has been the reverse of the unhappy characteristics that he now exhibits. Thus, on the physical side viewed medically, shall we put it ? These psychological changes are brought about by a general breakup and deterioration of the physical body, but there is another aspect of the case which has been to a large extent, if not altogether, overlooked. The etheric body plays a very important part in the well-being or otherwise of the physical organism. Under our present condition of ignorance as to the nature and possibilities of the etheric body, its functions and activities, it is probable that we are not giving it the opportunities for helping the physical, which it is capable of using to the highest degree. We must remember that this etheric body is the body of the soul, and within the soul is the divine spark, usually called the spirit. The soul should be, it certainly can be, in touch with higher vibrations of life-giving forces than are our physical bodies. Given an understanding of this fact, by voluntary cooperation with the higher functionings of the soul, we should find that the conditions of the physical body could be acted upon, and considerably helped by, the forces of healing that would be directed upon and through it by the etheric counterpart. I am convinced that we are losing great opportunities of obtaining help in this way, simply because of our ignorance regarding the existence of this other body and its importance in relation to our well-being. Physical ill health means that the soul body is in imperfect association with the physical. Something has dislodged it. It may be only in the slightest degree. Old age and senile decay result in, or are the result of, the same phenomenon. When the etheric body and the physical are in perfect association, good health is the inevitable outcome. This is what is meant by wholeness, or wholesomeness. When Jesus performed some wonderful cure, he said, "Thy faith hath made thee whole." Now the dictionary definition of the word whole is in a healthy state, healed, complete, a complete system, not defective or imperfect, entire, composing of all parts, units, etc., that make up the aggregate. When Jesus used the word whole in regard to a healing, he meant the word to be taken in its literal sense. I submit that he meant that he had joined two component and absolutely necessary to each other parts, that is the etheric and the physical bodies, together. When he restored an apparently dead body to life, he followed exactly the same procedure. He induced the etheric body, which had become dissociated from the physical, to return and complete the latter, so making the organism whole again. While the etheric body was dissociated, it was probably recharging itself with life-giving forces and energy, which it took back into the physical when Jesus induced the reunion of the two bodies. Also, when he referred to the man's faith having made him whole, I feel sure he meant something more than the man's mental acceptance of his Jesus' power to heal him. We can have that kind of faith in a bottle of medicine or a box of pills. No, I think he was referring to the fact that because of his faith, the man had allowed his higher mind to operate, and when that happens, even in the slightest degree, and SOS is sent from the physical brain via the etheric cord, which I have explained in another part of this book is a telepathic means of communication between the two bodies, to the etheric body. If the command for the return of the etheric to the physical is supported by spiritual knowledge and authority such as Jesus had, it results in a union of the two bodies, and subsequent health, activity, wholeness, on the physical plane. Jesus and his followers evidently knew all about the two bodies, their existence, their functions, and their infinite possibilities. Chapter 5. When death approaches. 5 months before my husband passed away, I knew that it was inevitable, but he had no idea of it, and the doctors had advised me on no account to tell him, because he was of a highly nervous and sensitive type, and though he was convinced of the reality of the afterlife, he could not bear the thought of leaving me alone. The difference of 18 years in our ages had made him feel that I was very much younger than I actually was, and he always considered I was quite incapable of managing my material life without his constant help, which he had given unstintingly, uncomplainingly, for so many years. Never had a man more thoroughly sacrificed the personal side of life to what he considered was his duty, and which no one else could have performed for me in the same wholehearted spirit. Whatever there was in his life that he had the slightest idea might interfere with, or detract from, the value of my work, he put on one side without the slightest shadow of regret. As some compensation, he had the knowledge that I should almost certainly never have attempted my work without him, or, having started, and finding it of necessity rather an arduous life, I might have discontinued it but for his unremitting care and loyalty in whatever I was doing. Through helping in my work, he achieved a belief in spiritual things, and in the immortality of the soul, that he frankly acknowledged nothing else had given him, though his youth had been passed in a good home with good parents, and he was brought up in the usual orthodox religious teachings. During his long, and at times painful illness, it never seemed to enter his head that he would not recover. An unfortunate phase of his illness was that morphine and other drugs had little or no beneficial effect in easing the pain. In fact, they seemed to irritate his nerves and increase his sufferings to a very great extent. This would have made it a very difficult time indeed, but fortunately a most kind and unselfish friend, Mrs. Ethel Hodson, who lived not very far away from us, possessed the power of spiritual healing, and whenever she laid her hands on place where the pain was, it decreased almost invariably, and sometimes my husband would fall into a short sleep, from which he would awaken, very often, refreshed and free from suffering. Circumstances took Mrs. Hodson away from the neighborhood. How I missed her unselfish, never failing help.